So we're holding in the middle of the Mishnah, Tzadikches Amud Beis, about three quarters of the way down the Amud. The line begins Achroin. We were talking about the various cases and the various permutations where a group lost their Korban Pesach and they sent somebody to find it, or vice versa. So they appointed him their shliach, or vice versa, he appointed them his shliach to shecht for him if he's running late, etc. So now some other cases involving mixed up karbonis. The Mishnah says, shtei chavuras shenis avu pischehen. If you have two groups that their karbonis Pesach were mixed up, so now we don't know which one belongs to which group, and therefore how are they going to eat them? So what we do is elu moshchen lahan echad ve'elu moshchen lahan echad. Each group takes one member of the other group to themselves. So let's say you have group Aleph. And means that each one of them takes one of the two Korbanos Pesach at random. They pick at random one of the two and take it for the moment that's for themselves. But then the key thing is Echad me'elu bolay etzel elu ve'echad me'elu bolay etzel elu. Then one person from each group switches to the other one. So let's say we had one group of, let's call them group Aleph, and let's say everybody in that group is named with a name beginning with Aleph. Let's say so we have one group consisting of Eli and Alexander and Avraham and Eliezer and so forth, and another group considering of Binyamin and Baruch and Ben Sion and so forth. Eli will go over to the group of Beis people, and Binyamin will come from the Beis group to the Aleph group. And now you have each group has one member of one person who was originally a member of the other group. And then they say like this, Im shalonu hu ha-pesach hazeh, if this Pesach that we're standing next to is ours, in other words, if we chose correctly and we had a 50-50 chance of being correct. So if the one we picked happens to have been our original Pesach, yodecha meshuches mishaloch, then we're asking you that you withdraw from your original Korban Pesach that you were registered for, v'nimneis al shalonu, and you will now register on ours. V'im shalchahu ha-pesach hazeh, and vice versa, if this Pesach was originally the one that belonged to your group, in other words, if we chose wrongly, yodeinu meshuches mishalanu, then we're withdrawing from our Korban Pesach, which is the other one standing over there, v'nimninu al shalcha, and we are registering for yours. Now, the reason why we need to do that is, because otherwise, what you have is, now again, we're going to discuss in the Gemara, and we mentioned yesterday a lot of times, that if the Korban Pesach has ever left without any owners for any amount of time, then it becomes possible. We're going to have a machlokas soon about the parameters of that, but at least when it's left without owners, then it's definitely possible. So if group Aleph stays intact and group Beis stays intact, the problem with that is that now each one is withdraw, they would have to say, if this one is ours, then we're keeping it. And if this one was originally not ours, then we're withdrawing from it and going to the other one. But the problem is then that leaves that animal without any owners, and then it becomes possible as a Pesach. That's why they have to swap one member, at least one member of each group has to go to the other one in order to do that. That way, no matter what you do, either this animal was originally, so let's say when group Aleph is speaking, either the animal that they picked is in fact the one that originally belonged to their group and then they're good, or it's the one that belonged to group Beis. Okay, so they have a member of group Beis with them. And therefore, so he remained the owner of it the whole time, and the rest of them are now joining him. So that works. The same way, what if it's not two groups? What if it's five groups? What if it's five groups, each one of five people, or 10 groups, each one of 10 people? Same thing. Each group takes to itself one member of each of the groups. And then they say the same kind of thing. Now, you do have to have, as the Gemara is going to point out, we do have to have that the number of people in each group is at least equal to the number of groups. If you had, for example, let's say there were five groups and one of those groups had only four people, then according to the Tana of our Mishnah, which the Gemara is going to say is Rabbi Yehuda, then that wouldn't work, because what you're going to end up with is that one Pesach may end up with people, with four people registered for it, where none of them are the original owners of it. And therefore that's not gonna be good. Whereas according to Rabbi, it's not a problem because he doesn't care about that point. So again, in other words, if you had five groups, like I say, you know, in the scenario I said before, you have, let's say, one group of all people named Aleph and another of people all named Beis and another one all whose names begin with Gimel, etc. So by the time we shuffle all the groups, we wind up that each group has one Aleph, one Beis, one Gimel, one Dalet, and one Hey. And then so that way they can say that in that way, each when they make new groups like that, each four people within each group, four of them say to the fifth one, what we said before, that if this was originally your Korban Pesach, then you withdraw from it and join ours. And if this was originally our Korban Pesach, then we're withdrawing from ours and we're joining you. And so everybody says that. So let's say in one of the new groups, Aleph, Beis, Gimel, and Dalet say that to Hay. Then Aleph, Beis, Gimel, and Hay say that to Dalet. Then and so forth until so within each group that declaration is said one time to each of the members of the group, and that way it works out that no matter what, that this Korban Pesach right now is under the ownership of one of the Alephs, one of the Bezes, one of the Gimels, one of the Dalads, one of the Hays. So no matter how you slice it, originally that Korban belonged to one or another of those groups. It belonged to either group Aleph or Beis or Gimel, etc. So fine, now you still have the whole time one of the original members of that group is still remain the owner of that Korban Pesach throughout all this swapping. So they do that. Another case, the Mishnah says, Shnayim shnisavu pischehen. Suppose you have just two individuals whose Korbanos Pesach got mixed up. So you just have Reuven and Shimon. Right now, only Reuven is registered for his, and only Shimon is registered for his, and they got mixed up. So we can't do what we said before to have them swap, because there's only one person in each group. Therefore, Zem Moshech Le'echad, Zem Moshech Le'echad. So they start by, again, each one picks one animal at random. He's not re-registering for that animal right now. He's just picking that animal for the purpose that we're going to discuss in a minute. Then Zem Manu Imoy Echad Min Ashuk, Zem Manu Imoy Echad Min Ashuk. Each one then goes and finds somebody from out in the street to join him. So Reuven goes and finds Levi. And so Reuven goes and finds Levi, and Shimon goes and finds Yehuda. Now each Korban Pesach is going to be able to have two people registered for it. And Zeb ba etzel Zeb, Zeb ba etzel Zeb. Then what they do is they switch partners. Reuven leaves goes away from the animal that he chose and walks over to the animal that Shimon had chosen. And Shimon does the same thing in reverse. So now you have with one animal, Reuven is standing together with Yehuda. And Shimon is standing together with Levi. And they say like this, Im shalihu Pesach zeh, if this Pesach that I'm standing in front of is originally mine, in other words, if to begin with we chose wrongly, if to begin with we chose wrongly, and therefore this one was really this one, when Shimon picked this one, it really was mine. And now when I walked over here, then it's actually my original one. Then yodecha meshuches mishocha v'nimneis al shali. Then you're withdrawing from yours. Which right now is the one that you're standing next to with that you were standing next to with Shimon, and you're going to register with mine. Reuven says this to Yehuda, and if to begin with this was yours, in other words, that we picked correctly to begin with, this was Shimon's Pesach, and he registered you, Yehuda, together with it. Now that we're swapping your Yodai Meshuchas Mishali, then I'm withdrawing from mine, and I will register for yours, for the one that you jointly own together with Shimon, where now you still remain the owner of it after the swap, and now I'm joining you for it. So again, it comes out that neither Korban Pesach ever was left without an owner for any amount of time. Okay. So the Gemara says, Tanan Rabbanan. Going back to earlier in the Mishnah, again, we had those cases where the group lost their animal for the Korban Pesach. And each one, so we had four different cases. One where the group told one individual, go find it for us. He didn't answer them anything back. He didn't tell them to make. He didn't tell them that they should be his shluchim. So we said that then we talked about that he always gets to eat the one that he shechted. Whether they get to join him or not will depend on whether his was shechted first or theirs was shechted first. And then in the second case of the Mishnah, we had the other way around. They didn't explicitly tell him to shecht it on their behalf, but he told them explicitly, shecht it on my behalf if I'm running late. Then it's the other way around. They always eat from the one they shechted. He can only join that one if theirs was shechted first. The third case of the Mishnah was where they both told each other, they both made each other shluchim. Then we said we have to know which one was shechted first, and they're all going to eat from that one. And in the fourth case of the Mishnah, we said that there's a case where nobody speaks, and then we're saying that neither one is responsible for the other. He eats his, they eat theirs. We don't care which one was shechted first. So the bri- so the Gemara is going to bring a brisa that talks about those last two cases. Amar lahen va'amru loy, if he told them, bring shecht the korban pesach on my behalf, if I'm running late, va'amru loy, and they told him, go find the korban pesach and shecht it for us, then oichol min rishon, then he and they, for that matter, eat from, all of them eat from the first one that was shechted. On the other hand, but we said in the Mishnah that if we don't know which one was shechted first, then none of them could eat from either Korban Pesach, because we don't know which one was shechted first, therefore we don't know which one they were all registered for. Loi amalahen v'loi amru loi, and we said if he didn't tell them anything and they didn't tell him anything. So even though, as the Rambam says, let's say they nodded their heads at each other, or they winked, or they made motions with their hands or whatever, so it was clear that they want him to shecht the Korban Pesach for them. And it was clear that he wants them to shecht it for him, but neither one actually said anything. So therefore, neither one is each other's shliach. So as we said in the Mishnah, Ein Achroi and Zalazeh, they're not responsible for each other. Each one just eats the Korban Pesach that they brought. Mikan Amru Chachamim, based on this, the Chachamim said, Yafesh Sikala Chachamim, silence is good for Chachamim, because in this case, them being silent gains that now nobody has to lose their Korban Pesach. How much more so that silence is good for fools? Shenema, as the pasuk says, Evel Machrish Chacham Yechoshev. As the pasuk says in Mishlei, that even a foolish person, if he's quiet, he'll be considered wise, because at least he's not speaking up and showing off his folly. So we see from our Mishnah how much good can be accomplished by being quiet at the appropriate time. Actually, the Tzlach points out that still, in all cases, you still could have a case where silence actually makes things worse. Namely, what if you have an example where they told him to find the Korban Pesach, and he doesn't say anything. So we can have or not where they told him. Let's say, for example, he went to find the Korban Pesach. He didn't tell them to shecht it on his behalf. What if he doesn't end up finding the Korban Pesach? So now he's stuck. He can't eat from their Pesach because he didn't register with them. They went and took a different animal. They gave up. They said, you know what? He's not back by now. He must not have found it. Let's go shecht the Korban Pesach of their own. He had never told them shecht on my behalf. So now he doesn't bring a Pesach. So don't you see? Wouldn't he have been better off then if he had spoken up and told them? And the Tzlach says, true. But on the other hand, at least then he can make Pesach Sheni. In the case of our Mishnah, if he spoke up, if he spoke up and told them Shecht on my behalf, then we have cases where he can't even bring Pesach Sheni because we don't know which one was Shechted first. So therefore, there still is. It's true. There can sometimes be something lost by being quiet, but there's more to be lost if he speaks up. Namely, he might even have where not only he can't eat Pesach Rishon, but he can't even bring Pesach Sheni. The Mishnah says, Shnayim shenis arvu pischeyem. We had the case in the Mishnah where two people, Reuven and Shimon, got their Korbanos Pesach mixed up. And we said then that Reuven gets Levi to join him, Shimon gets Yehuda. Then Reuven and Shimon swap animals, and along with that, they swap partners, and they make this Tanai. So the Gemara says, Lema masnissin deloik Rabbi Yehuda. Would we have to say that our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Yehuda? The Tanya, because we learn in a Braisa. The pasuk says, "V'im yim atabayis mi yos miseh." The pasuk says, "If the household is reduced is too little for being for a sheep. So the simple meaning of the pasuk, as we've learned before, is that if there's too few people in the household to be able to eat one sheep, then they join together with people from the next household. But we also darshan that the word yim'at means if they want to reduce the number of people that are registered for the seif, for the sheep, then so the pasuk says so the pasuk says they can do that miyos miseh, as long as the seif exists, which we had a machlokes before between the Chachamim and Reb Shimon, whether that means only as long as the seh is alive, before they only have till it's shechted to withdraw, or Reb Shimon had said they have until the blood is sprinkled to withdraw. Anyway, melamach mismatin b'hochin. So the word v'im yimat abayis means that they can reduce their numbers. That people can withdraw from registration. As long as one of the original members of the group is still there, still attached to that Pesach, Rabbi Yossi says you don't need that as long as you don't leave the Pesach without owners. Now, Rabbi Yehuda, Rashi points out, Rabbi Yehuda is not spelling out that he's saying one of the original members of the group has to be there. But it has to be that way, because otherwise there's no argument between him and Rabbi Yossi. So it has to be, therefore, that Rabbi Yossi is saying, I don't care whether any of the original members of the group are there. As long as somebody is still there, then we're good. So according to Rabbi Yossi, the case where we said over there that Reuven gets Levi and Shimon gets Yehuda, and then they swap partners and so on and so forth, that works very nicely according to Rabbi Yossi. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, how can that work? Rabbi Yehuda implicitly is saying you have to have an original member of the group still attached to that Pesach the whole time. And you don't, because Reuven and Shimon were the only original members of their respective groups. And now Reuven is taking one animal and Shimon is taking a different one. And it's only a 50-50 chance that they took the right animal. So, and then they swap, and it's also only a 50-50 chance that they end up with the right animal. So Rabbi Yehuda, it would seem, wouldn't allow that solution. So then our Mishnah must not be according to Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yechanan then says, no, we can even say that our Mishnah goes like Rabbi Yehuda, because kibben de Amr Rabbi Yehuda ein shechten as a Pesach ala yochid, since we had a few days ago that Rabbi Yehuda says you can never shech the Korban Pesach for an individual person. And we said Rabbi Yehuda doesn't even care whether that one person can eat the entire Korban Pesach. Just the fact that he's one person is itself enough to make it that you can't shech the Pesach for him, because the Pesach says, Loi sucha lizbayach has a Pesach. Because of that, mi'ikra, to begin with, therefore that Korban Pesach has to have somebody else registered on it. Therefore, the new person that they get to join is considered an original member of the group. So Rabbi Yehuda would say, if you had already Reuven and Levi in the group for this Korban Pesach, then we would say that you have to make sure that one original owner remains with the Korban Pesach. You can't have you can't have that Reuven and Levi both say that we're abandoning this Korban Pesach and going over to Shimon and Yehuda's. That wouldn't work because, according to Rabbi Yossi, that wouldn't work either. But if you have, let's say, Reuven and Levi were registered for this Korban Pesach, and now later on they joined Yisachar with them, now Reuven and Levi want to leave and go to a different Korban Pesach and leave Yisachar, then Rabbi Yehuda would hold that wouldn't work because Reuven and Levi were the original members and you could have shecht the Korban Pesach for Reuven and Levi by themselves. But in the case of our Mishnah, where you only had Reuven by himself to begin with and only Shimon by himself to begin with, then that wasn't a valid registration anyway, because you can't shecht the Korban Pesach on behalf of only Reuven or on behalf of only Shimon. Therefore, necessarily, you're going to have had somebody else, and therefore, when Reuven gets Levi and when Shimon gets Yehuda, then Levi and Yehuda are considered like original members. They're not considered like members that came later. Amar Rav Ashi must listen Nami Deka. So Rav Ashi says, yeah, in fact, you can see from the wording of our Mishnah that our Mishnah, in fact, definitely goes like Rabbi Yehuda. And that our Mishnah definitely goes like Rabbi Yehuda. Because Dikatoni, because the Mishnah had said, V'chein the Mishnah talked about that a similar example, you have five groups of five people each, implying it only works if all five groups have at least five members. It wouldn't work if some groups had five and some groups had four. Now, why? Lav mishum de like payish chad mimnei chavura gabei. Presumably, the reason is why it wouldn't work if some of the groups have five and some have four is because then you're not going to end up. You may end up with one animal that has nobody from its original group left with it. Imagine, let's say, for example, you have. So the groups are all reforming. As we said before, you end up with each group having one Aleph, one Beis, one Gimel, etc. Now, what happens, though, if one group to begin with only had, if let's say group Hay only had four members, now you have those four members are distributed around five, around four of the Korbanos Pesach, but the fifth one has no Hay member. What if that was the original animal that belonged to Hay? According to Rabbi Yehuda, that wouldn't work. So according to Rabbi Yossi, it wouldn't be a problem. According to Rabbi Yossi, what we do is before we start all the swapping, we'll bring in a fifth person into the Hay group, and then we can do that. And then we can do the swap. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, we're saying it wouldn't work because that wasn't an original member. And the Mishnah is saying Dafka. The Mishnah doesn't just say if there are five groups; it specifically says if there are five groups, each of five people. Now that must be now that insistence would only be according to Rabbi Yehuda. According to Rabbi Yossi, it wouldn't matter. So that the original. Because he's not part of the original group. Rabbi Yehuda is saying that one is the original cutoff. The pastor is chatzos, but the Gemara doesn't specify. But it could, yeah, so it could be that all this is taking place after chatzos. But it could be that we're just talking about when they registered. It could be a week before Pesach. We don't know. The Gemara actually doesn't specify what the cutoff point is. No, not later on. This is the end of the Perek. We're coming now to the end of Pesach Sheni. We're coming now to the end of the portion of Masechta Pesachim that talks about the Korban Pesach. On Omud Beis, we're going to be talking about Pesach as it is nowadays. Yeah. Okay. So, but in any case, Rabbi Yehuda says that you have to have some original member left. And if one of the groups only had four people, then you don't have. You could end up with no original member. From the fifth one. So therefore, so Aval Shochamish of Abaloi, Lav Mishum Blay Payish Chad Mimnei Chavura Gabei. Presumably the reason is because you always need to have one member of the original group, attached to that Korban Pesach. Shmamina, so that proves it. That proves it, therefore, that our Mishnah is according to Rabbi Yehuda. Therefore, the next part, when we talk about the two individuals who mixed up their Korban Pesach, and we say that they can get another individual to be with them, that would also be according to Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda would make an exception when there was only one person registered for the Korban Pesach, where since he can't shecht it with only one registrant, then therefore necessarily Shimon or then necessarily Levi and Yehuda count as original owners for that purpose. Because originally they couldn't have shechted the Korban Pesach only for Reuven or only for Shimon, because Rabbi Yehuda doesn't allow that. Not because once upon a time they were part of that group. Well, what we're saying is, in other words, Rabbi Yehuda would say, once Reuven picks Levi and Shimon picks Yehuda, and now Reuven and Shimon swap animals and swap partners, now it winds up Reuven is standing together with Yehuda. So either the animal that he has in front of him was originally his own, or it was originally the one that belonged to Shimon and Yehuda. So either way, you have one original member of the group left. I, Levi, and Yehuda are not original members. Rabbi Yehuda considers them original members because the Pesach couldn't have been shechted without them. Yeah. Okay. Hadron alach misha hoya tamei or slikol Pesach sheni. So now we go back to talking about the Korban Pesach. Now we go back to talking about Pesach as we have it nowadays. The dinim of the Seder. I think, by the way, it's an interesting thing of all things. Why does the Mishnah end with the why does the part about the Korban Pesach end with this whole discussion about swapping people between groups or whatever? Maybe. The idea is, I mean, the Korban Pesach is supposed to, among other things, is supposed to represent the achdus of the Jewish people. We even have Reb Nosson before saying the whole Jewish people could be yotzer with one Pesach. Okay, the halacha is not like him, but still it represents that Jewish people are joining together. We consider it a Korban Sibur for that reason. So maybe the idea is that we finish off with this kind of scenario where you have, even though you weren't originally a member of my group, but I'm going to join you into my group. I'm taking somebody from a different group, somebody who I otherwise might have had nothing to do with, but I'm joining him in together with me in order to make it possible for all of us to bring and eat our Korbanos Pesach. So we're shuffling all the groups and having people join who normally would never have been part of my group in order for that to happen. Maybe for that reason, the Mishnah finishes with that because it's an example of Avas Yisrael between all the groups. Yeah, it means that you're eating together. It means you're eating the Seder together with that person. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's funny. This Pesach, this Perek that we're going to learn now is called Arvei Psachim. But if you look at the first words of the Mishnah, as we have it in front of us, are Erev Psachim. So Tosfos actually mentions that why would we call it Erev Psachim? Erev Psachim could mean the evening on which we shecht the Korban Nois Pesach in plural, or it could mean Erev Pesach Rishon and Erev Pesach Sheni. On the other hand, if we say Arvei Psachim, then it just means every year Erev Pesach. It means all the Arvei Psachim throughout history. Anyway, so the Mishnah says Erev Psachim Samach L'Mincha on Erev Pesach close to Mincha, which means a little bit before Mincha, and we're going to discuss in the Gemara eventually whether we mean Mincha Ktana or Mincha Gdola. Mincha Ktana, remember, is 9.5 hours into the day, because as we learned back on Daf Nun Ches, they usually finished bringing the Korban Tamid by 9.5 hours in the day on a regular day. Therefore, that time is Mincha Ktana. That's the preferred time for davening Mincha is after that. Then you have Mincha Gdola, which is from 6.5 hours into the day, which is the earliest that they would ever shecht the Tamid. So what? Well, so yeah, the Tamid Shomei Namayim we're talking about. Yeah. The early, in principle, we said they could shecht it from Chatzos and on, but they didn't because the walls weren't completely perpendicular and it took a half hour to notice that the sun had moved. Yeah. So you have Mincha Ktana at 9.5 hours in the day, Mincha Gdola at 6.5 hours. Which one we're talking about over here, we're going to eventually see in the Gemara. Lo yoichal adam ad shetechshach, a person is not allowed to eat until it gets dark. Now, I forgot to mention, by the way, in this perek, you can see over here, you have Rashi on the top and Rashbam on the bottom. So now, in this perek, the reason for it is, we know that Rashi wrote his Pirush in several revisions. He wrote an original version of the Pirush, then he revised it, then he revised it again. Most of Shas, we have Rashi's third revision. But it seems in our perek, we only have Rashi's first revision. So therefore, it's much shorter than Rashi in most other places, and there's a lot that he doesn't explain. So therefore, they put in the Pirush of Rashbam in order to have more detail. But the Rashbam also is much. The Rashbam talks at greater length than Rashi, even than regular Rashi. He often brings in the Maskon al Pi Halacha. He often brings in various things. So we have in this perek we have Rashi and Rashbam plus Tosfos. Yeah. So actually, the Rashbam wrote a Pirush on the entire Shas. However, we don't have most of it. What we have is, we have his Pirush on Arvei Psachim. We have his Pirush on most of Baba Basra, because Rashi passed away on Daf Choftes of Baba Basra, and the rest of it was filled in by the Rashbam. The Rashbam's other Pirushim to Shas, we don't have them. In many places, Tosfos quotes him, but we don't have a comprehensive Pirush for him for the rest of Shas like we have yet. Okay. So Rashi over here says that the vote is that he's not supposed to eat before Mincha in order that he should eat the matzah l'te'ovon. So he should eat the matzah with an appetite because of a hidur mitzvah. The Rashbam says the same thing. Tosfos mentions that now what are we talking about? That he's eat. First of all, we have to be talking about that he's davening, that he already davened Mincha, because otherwise, if he didn't daven Mincha, you're anyway not allowed to eat before you daven Mincha. But also, the question is, Tosfos says, so what are we talking about that he might be eating? Now, you're not allowed to eat matzah on Erev Pesach. The Yerushalmi on our Mishnah says that a person who eats matzah on Erev Pesach is like boil arusase bebeis chomer. It's like he's having relations with his arusa while still in his father-in-law's house. In other words, what are you rushing over there and eating the matzah now when tonight you're going to be eating at L'Shem Mitzvah? So Tosfos says we could be talking about, let's say, matzah ashira. You can't use that for the Seder. Therefore, in principle, you would be allowed to eat that Erev Pesach. But you can't samuch l'mincha. Once it comes samuch l'mincha, then you can't, because then we want you to eat matzah with an appetite. Tosfos also adds that within the Suda itself, when it comes to the Seder, then you can eat as much as you want and not worry about matzah or te'oven, because since it's within the same meal, you're going to be careful. You know that you still have ahead of you. You know you still have ahead of you in the same meal. You have matzah to eat, so you know you're going to leave room for it. But in a different meal, you might think, I'm going to eat during the day and I'll still be hungry again at night, and then it turns out you're not. So therefore, the Chachamim said that you shouldn't eat past a certain time. No, well, so we're saying primarily, we're saying that you're allowed, primarily we're saying that you're not allowed to eat matzah. You're not allowed to eat bread, and obviously bread by that time you can't eat. So we have to be talking about matzah. But again, we're not talking about regular matzah because you're not allowed to eat that the whole day anyway. We're talking about matzah ashira, Tosfos says. Other kinds of food you would be able to eat on Erev Pesach, but not fill up on them, of course. I mean, because anyway, we don't eat matzah a month for Pesach, but yeah. We also have the minhag not to eat the things that we use for moror and charoses on Erev Pesach, right? Yeah. And also, Tosfos adds, also, when we say ad sheteshach, till it gets dark, now what it means is, usually, Shabbos and Yom Tov, you're allowed to bring in early, and you're allowed to make Kiddush early, and you're allowed to have the meal early. But with Pesach, not, because Davka, you have to have the first of the four koses is the one for Kiddush, and you have to have them by night. Matzah and Moro, Davka, the mitzvah for them is by night, not Meba'od Yom. Therefore, the Dalad koses also, therefore, you can't make Kiddush until it's actually dark. Even on a regular Friday night, you could make Kiddush earlier if you wanted, yeah. But here you can't. That's what it means, Ad Shetechshach. An interesting thing, by the way, in that connection, the Bach brings from the Maharal that even if you are going to eat your Shabbos meal early on a regular Shabbos, you should still eat at least a kezias of bread after Tzeitzak HaChavim, within the time that's Shabbos itself. So if a person is eating their Shabbos meal early, then they should do that. But when it comes to Pesach, you don't even have that option. You have to wait Ad Shetechshach. Continues the Mishnah, even the poorest Jew should not eat on Pesach night unless he's reclining. We have to recline like Bnei Chorin, like free people recline at the table, so therefore he needs to be reclining. Now, what's the point of it? What's the point of saying that he has to recline? Of course, why would it be any different for an oni than everybody else? Tosfos says two things. Number one, you would think now a rich person, a person who's well-to-do, okay, they have well, besides that they're used to it, also they have a bed to recline on, they have a couch to recline on, they have an easy chair to recline on or whatever. So therefore, but a poor person, what's he sitting on by his seder? He's sitting on a bench. So you would think maybe there's no mitzvah of Haseba for him because that's considered reclining. Nevertheless, he still has a mitzvah too. The other explanation, Tosfos says that it's actually referring back to the previous line of the Mishnah when we said, Lo yoichel adam ad shetechshach v'afilu onishu b'Yisrael, meaning even a poor person, even if he hasn't eaten for days, still, so you'd think, let him give him a break, let him eat, let him start his Seder early, so at least you can start filling up on karpas and everything ahead of time. No, even he has to wait ad shetechshach. He has to wait till it gets dark, yeah. Because again, he can eat a snack in the afternoon to take the edge off his hunger, but he can't start the Seder ad shetechshach just like everybody else. The Mishnah continues, V'lo yifchasu lo me'arba kosis shoyayim. They should not give him less than four cups of wine. Four cups are connected the dal l'shonis shogu'ula, v'itzeisi v'itzalti v'galti v'lakachti. So even if a person is poor, the gaboi tzedakah, who are responsible for giving food to the poor people, they have to make sure that he has at least four kosas of wine. So they have to make sure that he has at least four koses of wine. Tosfos discusses, now what about his family? Do they have to make sure that his family has four koses apiece as well? Or maybe he could be motzi all of them. So Tosfos goes back and forth discussing the question that maybe are the rest of the family members actually chayev in dalad koses or not? Are we saying that only he is chayev and in a pinch he can be motzi them? So Tosfos says, nir lahachmir, it seems that we should be machmer and require four koses for each one, in which case everybody's kos has to have all the rules of a regular kos. It can't be pogum in particular. We're going to talk about later on, and we're going to talk about in a few blot the concept of pogum, that if you drank from a cup, then now you can't use it for kiddush anymore. So that's going to apply to everybody's cups. Everybody's cup, we're going to have to make sure, is not pogum. Pogum, no. So that's the thing. Pogum does mean the cup itself has to be whole, but it also means the wine in it can't have been drunk from. So if you have, let's say you have a cup of wine and you took a sip from it, you can't use that for kiddush or for any of the dalad koses unless you add more wine to it. Yeah, if you add more wine to it, then you're taking away the pegimah. But yeah, okay. Va'afilu minat tamchui, and the Mishnah says even if this person is extra poor and he's being supported from the tamchui. A tamchui literally is a large serving tray. The way they had it in those days was, there were two different collections of tzedakah. The gaboi tzedakah would collect money from people, and they would use that to buy things for the. They would give that money out to the aniyim. That was mostly for the aniyim who live in town. So they would give them 14 meals worth, which would last them a whole week. They would give them the amount of money every Matzah Shabbos or every Sunday or whatever that would last them for an entire week. Then you have the really poor people, in particular the ones who don't even have two meals worth to their name. So they would collect food from people, that food collection is called tamchoi, and then they would give out that actual food to the aniyim. So that's that kind of thing is for a person who's really, really poor, who doesn't even have two meals worth of food to his name. It also primarily that was for people who are traveling through town, like the kabtzonim who come to one town and collect tzedakah, and then they go to the next town. So we're saying even if the person is being supported by the tamchoi, still they need to make sure that he has four kosis. And Rashbam adds, even let's say, what if the Gaboi Tzedakah didn't give him? What if they didn't do their job and they didn't give him Dalad Kosis? Then he has to sell his clothing, borrow money, hire himself out for work or whatever, and raise money for the Dalad Kosis. The Pashas goes for matzah as well, yeah. But matzah, I mean, nowadays matzah is somewhat expensive. Lav dafka, in those times, it was particularly expensive. Wine, the pashtus was the bigger expense of the seder than matzah was. Because you have to remember, we learned earlier in the Masechta about how they baked matzah. They baked it pretty much like their regular bread, just they made sure it doesn't rise, you know. Not like nowadays where we have all the chumras and all the hidurim and all, you know. You have, by the way, the famous story in that connection where a poor person comes to the Beis HaLevi and asks, are you allowed to use milk for the Dalad Kosis? So the Beis HaLevi goes and he says, this is a very complicated question. I have to look into it. He goes into his study. He comes out a couple of minutes later with a huge amount of money. He tells that enough for all the expenses of the Seder. He tells the guy, you know what? The truth is it's very complicated and I haven't got the time now to look into it. But take this money, go buy the stuff you need for your Seder. And after Pesach, we'll figure it out. Afterwards, the Beis HaLevi's family asks him, I mean, why so much money? I mean, just to buy wine for the Dalad Kosis, you only need a few dollars for that. So he tells them, when the guy asked if I can use milk for the Dalad Kosis, I realized obviously he doesn't have meat for his Seder either. Because how could he be drinking milk if he's going to be eating meat? So I realized he doesn't have anything for his Seder. So the Finch to Shulchan Aruch told him that, yeah, you have to give the guy everything that he needs. Yeah. Okay.
Concerning Biur Chametz this year is on Thursday.
Yeah, but let's talk about Biur Chametz afterwards because that's not really relevant to our Gemara over here. You can ask about that afterwards. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. My Irya Arvip Sochim. Now, why are you mentioning specifically that you can't eat on Erev Pesach? Nami. The same thing applies on a regular Erev Shabbos and Yom Tov, as we just had this past weekend with Purim. D'tanya, lo yoichal adam ba'aveh Shabbos v'yom tov min ha-mincha l'mayla. A person should not eat on Erev Shabbos or Erev Yom Tov from mincha and on, which again, we had, l'chatchila means from before mincha g'dola, which is why we said that you're supposed to ideally wash for your meal before chatzos, and b'dievet it meant before the beginning of the 10th hour, which is a half hour before mincha k'tana. Kadeshi konis l'Shabbos k'shur taiva, in order that he comes into Shabbos with an appetite for the Shabbos food. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, that's what Rabbi Yehuda says. Rabbi Yossi says, no, you can keep eating and drinking until it gets dark, and we don't care about your appetite for the Shabbos meal because we'll assume that you're still leaving yourself some room. So, in other words, why is the Mishnah telling us only on, according to Rabbi Yehuda at least, why is the Mishnah telling us only on Erev Pesach that you can't eat min ha-mincha l'mayla? It seems from this, now right now, the Gemara is assuming also that when it says min ha-mincha l'mayla, it doesn't actually mean literally from the time of mincha, 6.5 or 9.5 hours, as the case may be, but rather it means, like we said in the Mishnah, somoch l'mincha, a half hour before that. So in that case, then the Mishnah about Erev Pesach is exactly the same as Rabbi Yehuda is saying any Erev Shabbos and Yom Tov. So what's the chiddush of Erev Pesach? The answer is, the answer is, Rav Huna says, our Mishnah is needed according to Rabbi Yossi, who says that on a regular Erev Shabbos and Yom Tov, you can eat and drink as late as you want. So you should. So on a regular Erev Shabbos and Yom Tov, we're not worried about that. Hani mili ba'avish Shabbosis v'yom tovim. That only applies on a regular Erev Shabbos or a regular Erev Yom Tov. Then fine, if you eat until it gets dark, no big deal. Aval be'erev Pesach mishum chiyuv de matzah, but it comes Erev Pesach, you have the chiyuv of eating matzah. Moider. Then even Rabbi Yossi would agree that you have to not eat earlier than that because you need to have an appetite. You have to have an appetite for the matzah. By the way, you have Gemaras in a couple of places that mention a point where you have, let's say, you can have a person is eating matzah and it's not, and he's not doing it in the proper way. You can have where a person eats it, you have two people are eating matzah, the Gemara mentions in a few places. One of them is eating it properly and the other one is eating it l'shum achila gasa, and the Gemara actually starts by calling him that maybe he's a pesheya, or poshim yikosh l'vam. The Gemara says you can't call him a pesheya, he fulfilled the mitzvah, but there's achila gasa where a person just, he feels full already, but he's going to force himself to eat the matzah. Then you have, there's even more achila gasa where the person is just like nauseated by the sight of food. So if he eats like that last way, he may not even be yotze the mitzvah of matzah, because then that can't be considered eating. But the other way, to eat it achila gasa, where he's already full, but he's going to force the matzah down, is also not the right way of doing it. The right way should be, like we learned before about the Korban Pesach, that he eats it ala sova, he eats it and ends up filling up on it. So even Rabbi Yossi agrees that when it comes to Erev Pesach, you have to stop some time before. You have to stop from Samoch L'Mincha in order to have an appetite.
Does that mean we don't have to do Shalashudas this coming Erev Pesach?
So what do you do as far as Shalashudas? So there's a few possibilities. One, again, we're saying over here that the Min HaMincha L'Maila, primarily we're going to end up talking about on Daf Kuf Zayin or so. We're going to have a long detour after we're talking about over here about not eating before Erev Pesach. We're going to have a long detour in the Gemara through the dinim of Kiddush and Havdalah and a person moving from one place to another during the meal, etc. And finally, on Daf Kuf Zayin, we're going to get back to the topic of Pesach. So then we're going to talk about that the mincha we're talking about over here is primarily mincha ketana. So therefore, it means 9.5 hours into the day. So in other words, from the beginning of that hour, you can't eat. So first of all, we're saying you can't eat bread. You could eat other things. So one possibility is you make your shalashudas later in the day, when Erev Pesach is on Shabbos, like this year. You make it later in the day, but you can't eat bread anyway. On minigas, you don't eat matzah, even matzah ashira anyway. So you make it using other things, fruit, fish, meat, whatever. Another possibility is you make it earlier in the day. There are even people who have the minig that what they do is, now we know, of course, Erev Pesach, when Erev Pesach comes out on Shabbos, you have to daven early because you have to finish eating chametz fairly early. You have people, so therefore you end up eating your Shabbos meal much earlier in the day than you usually would. Some people actually have the minhag; they'll eat their Shabbos meal, they'll bench, then they'll sit down again right then and have shalashudas. So shalashudas then will be in the morning as well. So whether you, at least before Mincha Gdola. So whether to do that is not necessarily so oiskehalten, because after all, you're not supposed to just bench for the sake of that, you know, you're going to be eating right after that. And that second of all, Shalashudas is primarily supposed to be in the afternoon. But that is one way. Some people have that minhag. But yeah, other people have the minhag that they will eat Shalashudas earlier in the day before the 10th hour. And then technically they could even use Matzah Ashira for it. And other people will just eat it anytime during the day, even after the 10th hour. And fine, then you use fruit or meat or whatever, as it is. Minhag Chabad anyway is that we're not makbid to eat bread by Shalashudas. So therefore, it's really Shalashudas. That time is not necessarily going to be different than any other Shalashudas. The point is, though, you still have to make sure that you don't eat too much because you want to leave room for matzah at the Seder. Anyway, so anyway, Rav Huna's answer is that you're right. According to the Yehuda, our Mishnah would not have to have mentioned specifically Erev Pesach. The same din would apply to any Erev Shabbos or any Erev Yom Tov. But Rav Yossi, who says that on a regular Erev Shabbos or Erev Yom Tov, you could eat as late as you want, he would agree that on Erev Pesach, you have to stop early. Rav Papa gives a different answer. Afilu Tamer Rav Yehuda, you could even say our Mishnah goes like Rav Yehuda, because the difference is Hosim b'Shabbosas v'Yamtovim min HaMincha u'lamayla hudasir. Because the difference is you makshin were assuming that when the Braisa says min HaMincha u'lamayla means Samoch LaMincha, like we said in our Mishnah. No, on a regular Erev Shabbos and Yom Tov, even Rav Yehuda is saying only min HaMincha u'lamayla hudasir, only from the actual time of Mincha, 9.5 hours. Is it asr? Samoch l'mincha shori, but he would say that samoch l'mincha, a half hour before that, would be mutter, provided, as Tosfos says, that you already daven mincha. Be'erev Pesach, afilu samoch l'mincha nami asr. On Erev Pesach, the deadline is a half hour before it would be on a regular Erev Shabbos and Erev Yom Tov. So therefore, our Mishnah could be according to Rabbi Yehuda as well. On a regular Erev Shabbos or Yom Tov, Rabbi Yehuda would say that you have to stop eating at 9.5 hours in the day, 3:30, let's say. But on Erev Pesach, he would say you have to stop at 3 o'clock, half an hour before that. So there is a chiddush in our Mishnah, even according to Rabbi Yehuda. So that's another way of answering it. So now, we'll continue tomorrow, Bez Hashem. and continue discussing this point of whether you're allowed to eat on Erev Shabbos Samoch LeMincha, and what are the dinim about. Now this is also something that was Negea a couple of days ago when it came to Purim. You had the whole discussion about, can you make your Suda and be Purim Mapo Makadish? That is also going to feature in the Gemara tomorrow, this issue of Purim Mapo Makadish, of interrupting your meal that you started on Erev Shabbos in order to make Kiddush and in order to make Amotzi, and then continuing with your meal. That's going to be one point that we're going to discuss tomorrow. Right, so Purim Mapo Makadish, we're going to talk about it tomorrow. The idea is you want it to be as if the bread was brought now to the table, recovered Shabbos. So we'll talk about whether you wash again. We'll talk about all that tomorrow, Rav Hashem. Lamaisa, it is true that being Purim Mapo Makadish, there are certain problems with it. One of that, which we're not going to, I mean, the Gemara is not going to discuss those problems, but you have, first of all, there's the question of what brachas you should and shouldn't say, which we're going to discuss in some detail, Rav Hashem. You also have the fact that you're leaving out certain brachas. Api Kabbalah, it's not the right thing to do, and Poshita can be confusing. So actually what happened was that Abayim's Minhag was always, they don't do Purim Mapo Makadish. They just stop eating before Shkia. The Rebbe allowed it by Fabrengens for many years. For example, when you have a Kosher Bracha Fabrengen, when Yom Tov comes out on Friday and there would be a Fabrengen going into Shabbos, so there would be Purim Mapo Makadish until it came Simchas Torah Tovshin Dalad Mem. They were trying to do that and people were getting all mixed up about what they should do as far as what brachas of Kiddush they shouldn't say and what brachas of Hamotzi then when whether they should say shouldn't say the bracha of Hamotzi. So at that point, the Rebbe, so that the Rebbe was like laughing about it, like the fact that there was such confusion and such everything. So apparently nobody was able to figure it out. So from then on, the Rebbe said, you know what, just don't do Purim Mapo Makadish. And a couple of years later, when the same Kavios came out again, the Rebbe said flat out in the Fabrengen that Minik Chabad nowadays is not to do Purim Mapo Makadish. So we'll talk about all that detail tomorrow, Bez Hashem.
What about doing Biur Chametz and the next day eating challah on Shabbos? What's the point?
Well, what's the difference in a regular year? You also do Biur Chametz. In a regular year, you do Biur Chametz on you do Bedikas Chametz on the night after the 13th, and you eat and you can still eat Chametz the next morning. The point is, you're leaving Chametz over that you're still eating. Mashem Shayu Yenechane Betzina. We knew at the beginning of the Masechta. So now also, when Erev Pesach is on Shabbos, it's no different. The difference is, you're still doing Bedikas Chametz on Thursday night because you can't do it Friday night. But you're getting rid of any chametz that you didn't know of in the house up until this point. Any chametz that you know of, fine, you're keeping at least some of it in order to eat it on Friday and on Shabbos morning.
Because we say kol chamira.
De lo chamite or de lo chazise, that I haven't seen and I haven't found and I don't know about, then I'm being mevatel. You're explicitly in the first kol chamira, you're explicitly excluding the chametz that you know exists in the house because you're saving that. Only the second kol chamira do we mention the chazise or the lo chazise, whether I've seen it or not, etc. And yeah, that you're doing on Erev Pesach morning, whether it's Shabbos or weekday, you're saying that second kol chamira. Sure. Yeah, but that's the second one. The first one, you're dafka only mentioning
the
chametz that I don't know about.
The second one we're saying on Shabbos, on when would you say this year?
Shabbos
on Friday,
morning.
Don't
time of, Shabbos morning. No, you burn the chametz on Friday, but you don't say the second kol chamira at that point. You say the second kol chamira Shabbos morning.
So you have to do your seuda before you say the second kol chamira?
Mm-hmm. Which is why when Erev Pesach comes out on Shabbos, you'll see that all shuls daven early and you have your Shabbos meal early, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.